Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. This week, Dr. Stephen Genta dialogues with Dr. James Messina about Dr. Messina's role as co-founder of the American Mental Health Counseling Association and his efforts on behalf of professional counselor licensure.
This is Dr. Stephen Genta, and today we're interviewing Dr. Jim Messina. Dr. Messina is a co-founder and past president of the American Mental Health Counselors Association. Our topic of discussion, the historical perspective on the field of mental health counseling. Jim, what motivated you to co-found the American Mental Health Counseling Association?
Steve, in 1976, I was working at the Community Mental Health Center in Pensacola, Florida, the Escambia County Mental Health Center. And a co-worker, Dr. Nancy Spizo, who was a graduate of the University of Florida, where I had done my postdoc, was a director of a similar children's program as I was in the center. And she called me up on the phone and said, Jim, come and look at this article that appears in the APGA guidepost. So I went over, and there was this letter from three guys from Illinois complaining that there was no home for people who did marriage and family and mental health work in the APGA at the time. And I told her, oh, don't even worry about it. Thelma Daly, the current president of APGA, is a good friend of mine because she used to be the president of ASCA. And I had been the chairman of the negotiations committee under her and on her delegate assembly. So I said, let me call Thelma and see what we have to do. And Nancy just looked at me like I had three heads. And I said, no, trust me, Nancy, we can do this. And said, in fact, I'll call Chuck Lewis first. He's the executive director of APGA, which I did on the spot. I asked Chuck what the requirements were to establish a division. He explained what we needed to do. And he said, well, Jim, what would be the name of the division? And on the spot, I said, the American Mental Health Counseling American Mental Health Counselors Association. And you notice, not counseling, but counselor, with the intention of really talking about the people, not the field. And he said, fine, that would be really good. And I mentioned the letter in the guidepost. So he said, write another letter to the guidepost announcing the formation of the division. And I told him I would do that. And then I said I would also contact Thelma Daly to get her to agree to back us up when we made this application. So I called Thelma. Thelma was thrilled. She said, fabulous. All you need are 200 signatures to come in with a petition to create a division. On the spot, then, we coined the term mental health counseling, because prior to that, Nancy and I were having a hard time trying to figure out how we wanted to characterize this new division, and we didn't want to call it marriage and family because there already was a National Association of Marriage and Family Therapists, and there's a long story, I won't get into it, but I personally had a philosophical difference with AAMFT because of the clinical supervision requirement in order to be a member. I did not believe that a new association for mental health counselors should have such a process tied into membership of a professional association. So to make a long story short, we got our letter into the APGA guidepost, and in response to that letter, we had 500 people expressing a desire to form a division called the American Mental Health Counselors Association, not division of APGA. We made the formal petition to the board of directors of APGA in their June meeting, and unfortunately, at that time, they were having some internal political problems, and they made a decision at that meeting that they needed to put a moratorium on the establishment of new divisions. They got back with us to inform us. Thelma called me personally and said that didn't put us out of the water. It just meant that it put us off for a year. Well, we felt, Nancy and I, that we needed to maintain the momentum we had established. So we continued with a freestanding 501c3 established corporation in the state of Florida called American Mental Health Counselors Association. And we operated it out of my home in Pensacola. And I was very fortunate. We had just had a child. Stephen, our son, was born in May of 76. So Connie, my wife, was able to assist us as our first ex officio administrative assistant. And she managed all the mailings and email. And we didn't have email at the time, but newsletter and all that kind of stuff. So for one complete year then, we ran the association out of our house.
What year was that, Jim?
That was in 1976, and so that's one of the reasons why we call my son the AMCA baby, because we follow the age of the association by his birth.
Well, you and I have been around for a while. AGPA.
APGA.
APGA, excuse me.
American Personnel and Guidance Association.
Which becomes?
The American Association of Development. AACD, American Association of Counseling and Development, which then became the third iteration, finally, was the American Counseling Association, or the ACA, which is its current name. So this is the bad news about the initial founding and co-founders of AMCA. Nancy and I had a disagreement. She was really angry at APGA because of the moratorium. So over the course of the year, obviously, the association, now it was a freestanding association, we scheduled our first conference, the AMCA conference, in Columbia, Maryland. And the reason we scheduled it in Columbia, Maryland was that by that time, I'd become a director of Johns Hopkins University Center in Columbia, Maryland, and my family had moved up to Columbia, Maryland at the time. Simultaneously, with being up in Maryland, then I could work with APGA to grease the slide for us to become a division the following convention. Well, we had a vote in January of 1977 as to joining APGA or not, and by then we had 1,500 members. And the vote came out 57% in favor of us becoming a division. Nancy was upset with that, and from that point, she resigned her role in the association. I was president-elect of AMCA, and that's how I became the president of AMCA. And then in the convention in 1977, the APGA board voted in AMCA, and it became official in 1978. And so for that reason, I was president of AMCA for well over much longer than it ordinarily would have happened. We were on our way once we became a division because we didn't have to worry about the nuts and bolts of operating any longer, and then we could put all of our energy into what is probably the much more important piece of information, and that was the creating of a profession of mental health counselors and all of the accoutrements that go into making a profession.
Speaking of that, can you give me just a little bit of information about the particulars of how the AMCHA ended up initiating the National Academy of Certified Clinical Mental Health Counselors? What were your motivations behind that? And I think that would lead us to a follow-up question, which would be your role in the different states acquiring licensures as mental health counselors.
Once AMCA became a division, we recognized that we now needed to put into place the key components that make a profession in the mental health field. The first, of course, is a professional association, and we now had that. The second thing was a code of ethics, and I wrote the code of ethics for the American Mental Health Counseling Association, and I utilized the APGA code of ethics, but then I added specific requirements that pertain specifically to the field of mental health. The third thing was that a hallmark of a profession is the credentialing of the professionals, the self-credentialing or the self-monitoring. And the prototype that we utilized were the social workers. At the time, the certified clinical social worker or the NASW credential was considered a really respectable self-monitoring credential, self-policing credential in the field of mental health. And so based on that prototype, I wanted us to have a certified clinical mental health counseling credential. I had contacted the guys who were very involved with the licensure in the state of Virginia. The licensure in Virginia, the licensed professional counselor, had really come into existence a couple years earlier, prior to AMCA's establishment. And so Carl Swanson, who was acting as the president of the Board of Licensure of Virginia, gave us permission to take lock, stock, and barrel their entire set of procedures and adjust them for the National Academy of Certified Clinical Mental Health Counselors. So during the course of my presidency of AMCA, we began to establish the formation of a freestanding National Academy that would be a credentialing body for certifying mental health counselors. Simultaneous with that, however, there was an effort at the APGA level simultaneously to try to get a national certification board established for counselors, because we all knew that if we policed ourselves through certification, then states would be more willing, state legislatures would be more willing to consider the creation of licensure for counselors, because they would have a code of ethics and they would have national credentialing examinations that would be available to these licensing boards in order to accomplish that. So we knew that if we had a good academy and a good credentialing for counselors, we would then be better able to lobby for and accomplish the licensure for mental health counselors. So when I became past president of AMCA and the third president of AMCA took over, Steve Lindenberg, then I was freed up, and we created this National Academy. Simultaneously with that, I was sitting on committees with APGA, and we were exploring the notion of a national credentialing for counselors at large. Unfortunately, because I'm an idealist, I got caught up with the whole notion of portfolio credentialing and competency credentialing, which was a very top-heavy model of credentialing, and became very involved with the National Commission for Health Accrediting Agencies and followed their competency model. Because of that, unfortunately, the Academy's initial entry into the field of credentialing mental health counselors was a dismal failure, because we only attracted 75 applicants for the first go-around because our portfolio was so demanding. Well, we learned from our mistakes. We whittled the portfolio application down to a more reasonable size, and then from that point on, we worked hard to reestablish the academy, and with that modified portfolio, we were able, by the time I left the role as chairman of the academy, with around 750 certified clinical mental health counselors. Simultaneously with that, of course, we recognized that we were going to go nowhere as a field of counseling if we only had one national certifying body for mental health counselors. So I worked with the APGA group and offered them, as chairman of the academy, just as Carl Swanson had generously offered to us from Virginia, I offered the National Board of Certified Counselors, which it became the National Board, I offered them the lock, stock, and barrel, all of the procedural materials that we had developed through the academy, including our code of ethics. But more importantly, I offered to them the cardinal rule don't make the mistake the Academy made. Make sure your application process is more simplified. Make sure your national exam is more reasonable and expectations. Don't make it so cumbersome that counselors would be hesitant to get on board. Also, do not be afraid to grandfather in your initial group without a national exam. If I had to do it over again, I would have done the Academy the same way. Fortunately for us, people listened because they saw the mistakes we made anyways, and they wanted this to be a financial success. So the NBCC, in its initial drive, we attracted well over 15,000 counselors who became National Board Certified Clinical National Certified Counselors, or NCCs. So the National Board of Certified Counselors came into existence, and they appointed me to be a founding member of that board, and I was able to do that because my term at the Academy by then had run out. We made sure that all terms, both at the Academy and NBCC, were only three-year terms, not renewable. And the reason for that is to keep fresh blood coming in, to keep it an honest and upright organization. Well, today, the NBCC is extremely strong, and it took us 3 years after the NBCC came into existence to fold the National Academy under the umbrella of the NBCC. So the NBCC and the National Academy and all the other specialty boards under the NBCC have been utilized very well by state efforts to get state licensure, both as licensed professional counselors and mental health counselors.
Jim, you know that we're working with the draft of a new KCREP standards, and there's a conversation going on about
play it back, just
how we should set this up, whether it should be 60 hours or less. Can you give us some ideas? You helped write the law for the state of Florida, which is a 60-hour state. You helped write those laws. Can you give us some your perspective on this, some of the hurdles and some of the decision-making that went on during that process?
Sure. First off, let's go back to the Licensing Act in Virginia. The Licensing Act in Virginia was a 60-hour requirement way back when. The licensed professional counselor in Virginia has always been a 60-hour program. Secondly, we'd always, in setting up the Academy, were using a 60-hour model because that was the accepted model. It was the gold standard in mental health for a terminal degree for a mental health practitioner, namely the social workers, had a 60-hour requirement, and that was a terminal program in social work. And I believed that we needed to create a terminal degree below the doctoral level for mental health counseling. Because I believe that doctoral level people in mental health counseling would be the instructors, supervisors, agency directors, etc. So, utilizing the National Academy standards of 60 hours, utilizing the Virginia LPC, I wrote the enabling legislative document for the lobbying effort in the state of Florida to do two things. One, to sunset Chapter 490, which at the time was the licensing board for psychologists, and by sunsetting them, then this group of us who had gotten together to create a coalition were able then to create a new set of legislation that enabled the creation of not only licensed psychologists, but also licensed mental health counselor, licensed social worker, licensed marriage and family therapist, and licensed school school psychologist. So that new 490 board got established in 1981 based on this legislative material that we had lobbied for, and the licensed mental health counseling was written in by law as a 60 hours licensed mental health counseling law. Then what occurred was that in the state, the counselor education departments got up in storm because they stated to the legislature, the legislature was legislating a standard or requirement that way exceeded the common practice out there in the field of counselor education. And the truth was there was only one program in the state of Florida at the time that offered a 60-hour program, and that was University of Florida. And even the University of Florida didn't offer a 60-hour program per se, but offered a master's in counseling and then an EDD, EDS, which is a specialist in education, or a 60-hour program. So the EDS, not EDD, the EDS was kind of what we were looking at in Florida, and this Council Rep program said, we're not going to go there. We don't want to do this. So the legislature had to rewrite that specific enabling legislature just for the number of hours and the courses required, and the new licensing act came into existence on, at 30 hours. Then over the course of, that was in 1981, so over the course of time, it finally worked its way back to 60 hours, and so today it is now a 60 hours license. But the reality was that if it had been true to form, and if the counselor educators had just accepted that reality and were willing to really work at trying to upgrade their training programs to a clinical level, we wouldn't have had this long-term battle here in the state of Florida. As it turns out, we now have in this country 48 out of the 50 states that license counselors, and of the 48 states, 15 out of the 48 have mental health counseling in their title. And the most recent state, of course, was Hawaii in 2004, which has a 60-hour program, a 60-hour requirement for a licensed mental health counselor. If the state has the term licensed mental health counselor, that licensed mental health counselor has to come from 60 hours of training. However, interestingly enough, some states say those 60 hours have to come in combination with a master's, which could be 48 hours. So even the state legislatures recognized that counselor education programs were not willing to accept a 60-hour minimum requirement, so they wrote it into their legislative licensing act to force counselors to go get additional clinical training, even though their counselor education programs were not willing to make that commitment to the gold standard of 60 hours. And I think that's where we are today. Counselor educators are typically in schools of education. They don't come out of a clinical mental health experience. They're not interested, nor do they want to get totally involved in the mental health field, because politically, as coming out of a school of education, it isn't in their best interest to take on psychology and social work head-on with their credentialing. So we've had people for political reasons who've always backed down on the gold standard of 60 hours. I think it's about time counselor educators stand up and say, we are part of the mental health field. We do have a mental health counselor certification and licensing requirement in 15 out of our 48 states. And it's time that we stand up and tell our schools of education, yes, we want a 60-hour master's in mental health counseling. Sadly enough, Steve, I mean, what really is the most shocking of all of this is when we look at KCREP itself. When we look at KCREP, what's really disappointing is that there are so few counselor education programs that are even accredited by KCREP. And then out of the few that are accredited, there's only 198 programs that are accredited by KCREP. Then out of those 198, only 47 are accredited as mental health counseling. I mean, Steve, there's something wrong here. And now they want to lower the standard? I think not. I think the whole point, since 1976, mental health counseling efforts, the whole advocacy for mental health counseling has been talking about a gold standard of 60 hours for a terminal degree based on the supreme model of the social workers. And people just have been ignoring that year after year after year. And I think it's time we step up to the plate and say, yes, indeed, if you're a clinician who functions privately in the state, you must have 60 hours. And one last thing before we move to another topic. In the state of Florida, it took until 2005, mind you, we were licensing mental health counselors in 1981. It's taken us 24 years to finally establish that mental health counselors are equivalent
to psychologists and social workers when it comes to involuntary admission to state hospitals or into hospitals, the Baker Act here in Florida. Just this past year, July of 2005, we finally have new statutes that allow mental health counselors to do Baker Acting. Let me tell you, Steve, if we lower that standard, if we lower the requirements for licensure in the state of Florida, the effort that has taken 24 years to get counselors to be on parity with psychology and social work will go down the drain.
You make a good point, Jim. I know that we both are licensed in the state of Florida, and the marriage and family folks were not included in the Baker Act bill, and in part because their academic training, they have less hours, and their internship is a third of what the internship is for mental health and half of what it is for social work. In the state of Florida, the social work hours are 60. Their internship is two-thirds in length of the mental health counselors.
Steve, I think the real interesting point is that mental health counseling in the state of Florida has always pushed for a standard that's even been higher than social work. For example, we require for our licensed mental health counselors in the state of Florida that they must have 2,000 hours of supervision post-graduation, which means that they have a minimum 2 years of supervised work in order to become licensed. But that's in addition to the fact that their master's program has an additional 1,000 hours of internship and practicum. So put that together, that's a requirement of 3,000 clinical supervised hours. That's higher than any other profession in the state of Florida in order to get licensed. And I think that really demonstrates one profession's commitment to putting new people out in the field who are clinically sound enough in order to provide quality services to their clientele.
Beyond the quality of as a service provider, there's a pragmatic issue. I know that third-party payers in this state reimburse social workers at a higher rate than they do mental health counselors. It's only pennies, generally speaking, compared to mental health, and substantially different between mental health and marriage and family, depending on the board, of course, and the insurance company that you're dealing with. And so I think at 60 hours, not only does it make it more portable from state to state as far as licensure when you move across state, I think it also puts more dollars in your pocket if you can show the 60-hour requirement versus 50 or 45 or 48.
Well, Steve, you bring up a really excellent point. I have been nothing but proud of the fact that the licensed mental health counselors in the state of Florida have been gaining parity, at least in the Baker Act. But more importantly, they gained parity in the insurance reimbursement field years ago when managed care came into existence. This is the best joke of them all. Licensed psychologists in the state of Florida were reimbursed and still continue to be reimbursed at only $5 an hour more than licensed mental health counselors. And I think that if we were to lower the standard for licensed mental health counselors, that quasi-parity there would be lost. And I think that we have been able over the last 30 years to establish that 60 hours is a terminal degree equivalent for mental health counselors, just like social workers. And I think people out in the community understand that a licensed mental health counselor is equivalent to a licensed psychologist.
Jim, we only have a minute or two left. Do you have a final thought for us?
I'm very disappointed in the field of counseling, to be perfectly frank with you. We have 100,000 licensed counselors out there. And yet, when we look at the membership of ACA and AMCA, the numbers are dismally low. And it does concern me that the field, counselor educators in particular, have never been behind the notion of promoting professionalism of the field. So if it's going to take a little debate about 60 versus 55 hours for mental health counseling departments, then let's have that debate. But let's not just debate the number of hours. Let's debate what it takes to make a profession. And I believe that those four hallmarks have to be maintained at the highest standards. And those are, of course, a code of ethics. They are the credentialing, both state licensure and certification. But more importantly, the fourth one that I never mentioned was, of course, the accreditation of the training programs. and we have to maintain gold standards at our accreditation level. And then lastly is the professional associations themselves. So my urgent desire is to see counselors and counselor educators get behind the notion of professionalizing our field. Let's get those membership numbers up, and let's get the advocacy voice for counseling and the mental health counseling field in particular to be heard at the federal level and at the state level in a more unified fashion.
Jim, as always, spending an hour or 2 hours with you is quite an experience, and I really appreciate the time you spent with us today with this interview. Thank you.
You've just heard an interview with Dr. James Messina by Dr. Stephen Genta regarding a historic perspective of the field of mental health counseling. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselorAudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.